This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, October 6th. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, new legal protections for renters came into effect Friday, just as emergency pandemic measures expired. We bring you the new installment in a collaborative series on the affordable housing crisis in the Mountain West. Chris Moore has his weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You. And herbalist Brigitte Mars will bring us her regular Wednesday feature, Naturally. A BBC update and commentary from Jim Hightower are at the bottom of the hour. And then it's a public affair. Today we'll broadcast Monday night's Longmont Mayoral Candidate Forum. At 9:30, Greg Schultz will be in with the Morning Sound Alternative to bring you a mix of eclectic music until noon. All that's still ahead this morning after these headlines with KGNU's Jamie Sudler.
At last night's Boulder City Council meeting, county health officials said that the number of COVID infections is moving in the right direction. Even so, the Daily Camera reports that the county remains in surge response mode. Currently, Boulder County is experiencing a seven-day rate of about 127 infections per 100,000 people, which is much better than a few weeks ago when the Delta variant was causing cases to rise. Lexi Nolan, deputy director of the County Health Department, told the council that the good news is that they are almost back to a normal non-surge response status. However, there are no plans to change the current health orders, including indoor mask mandates. One council member asked whether hospitalizations were high for children in the county, and Nolan said that there aren't as many for them as there are among adults, particularly those who are not vaccinated. The University of Colorado's health system has fired 119 employees for failing to get vaccinated against COVID-19 without a religious or medical exemption. The number of people terminated from employment with UC Health is a small fraction of the 26,500 employees in the state. The Colorado Sun reports that UC Health had told employees that they needed to be vaccinated by October 1st or obtain an exemption. In other COVID-19 news, a woman from El Paso County says that she will not be allowed to get a kidney transplant at UC Health until she is vaccinated against the virus. Leilani Lutali said she received a letter from the provider saying in part that some transplant centers across the U.S. already have a vaccination requirement in place and others are making it policy. A spokesperson for the hospital told the Denver Post that it's common for transplant patients to be asked to meet a variety of conditions before, during, and after surgery, which has been in place since before the pandemic. He added that patients may be required to receive other vaccinations, including hepatitis B, MMR, and that these requirements increase the likelihood that a transplant will be successful and the patient will avoid rejection. Yesterday, Colorado's Redistricting Commission released a new plan for state House and Senate districts. The map is distinct from a map that has already been released for U.S. congressional districts. The state legislative districts outlined are the final set before debate begins by the 12 commissioners, four of whom are Republican, four Democrats, and four unaffiliated. According to the Colorado Newsline, the proposed districts would likely keep the current Democratic majorities in both the state House and Senate. The new plan comes 1 week before the commission's deadline to submit the map to the Colorado Supreme Court for its approval. A committee of the University of Colorado Board of Regents considered a resolution concerning critical race theory yesterday. Heidi Ganahl, a Republican regent and a candidate for governor, proposed a measure that would have banned administrators, faculty, and staff from enforcing discriminatory or prejudicial attitudes based upon race, ethnicity, or gender. Colorado Newsline reports that the resolution said discrimination in any form is antithetical to the values of the university, Colorado, and the U.S., and that mandatory diversity and bystander training can create a hostile work environment. Conservatives have argued that such training would unfairly demonize white students and oppress students of color. The committee voted 2-2 on the measure, which means that it was not recommended, but the full Board of Regents could still theoretically pass it. Another regent, Ilana Dubin-Spiegel, proposed a resolution that would have recognized critical race theory as a legitimate field of inquiry and discourse. That measure also failed on a tie vote. Leaders from Colorado's Latino and immigrant communities called for equal overtime protections for farm workers yesterday at a gathering at the state capitol. The advocates said that they were deeply concerned and disappointed with the new rules proposed by the State Department of Labor and Employment last week. Nine News reports that under the proposed rules, new protections would be phased in beginning in November 2022. Until the end of 2023, farm workers would receive overtime pay only after working 60 hours a week, and then higher pay would generally be required after 48 hours, with more lenient provisions for seasonal and small employers. Pamela Resendez Trujano, the director of Colorado Jobs with Justice, said that they are asking Governor Polis' administration to ensure that farm workers are treated like all others in this state, which requires overtime pay for after 40 hours of work in a week. Planned Parenthood of the Rocky Mountains has seen an increase of Texas residents coming to seek services. In September, a new restrictive law took effect in Texas, banning most abortions after 6 weeks, one of many such laws introduced at the state level in the last year. At a news conference on Monday, Vicky Cowart, the organization's CEO, said that they have experienced a 130% rise in Texas patients compared to August. Nine News reports that the Park Hill Planned Parenthood Center in Denver has seen an increase of 520%. Cowart said that they will do everything they can to serve patients who come to their region and are working overtime to do so. In today's weather, it will be mostly sunny with a high near 76 and a chance of showers and thunderstorms after 3, and an overnight low of 50. Tomorrow, sunny with highs in the upper 70s. Right now in Boulder, it's about 46 and 52 in Denver. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. A new state law took effect Friday, which protects renters from excessive late fees and evictions in certain circumstances. Under the new law, if a tenant pays the full amount owed before a court signs off on an eviction, the landlord must accept the payment and cancel the eviction. The law came into effect just before Governor Jared Polis ended the final pandemic protection order for renters facing eviction. For more, KGNU's Rosana Longo-Better spoke with Cecia Guardarrama Trejo, Associate Director of the grassroots advocacy organization 9 to 5 Colorado.
Tell us how this pandemic rental protection order came to be, now what has happened, and what can people expect?
This weekend, Governor Polis did not renew any executive orders regarding eviction, so pretty much there are no more protections related to eviction due to COVID at the federal or at the state level. So that means that evictions pretty much can start to operate under current statute, which is a time frame a lot quicker than before. You know, residents had or tenants had 30 days to cure, and now it kind of goes back to that timeline around 10 days. So something that also happened on Friday is that a new law went into effect on October 1st. That covers a couple of things, including eviction court reform. And so, first of all, folks can always find the new laws in the Colorado General Assembly page. And this act in particular around keeping Coloradans housed is Senate Bill 21-173. And it does a couple of things. One, it now puts some limits and caps on late fees. So most of the time when somebody pays their rent late, oftentimes there are late fees that start to accrue. But this actually now puts some guidelines, including a cap and a grace period before a late fee can kick in. So late fees can no longer be more than $50 or 5%, whichever is greater. And then there's 7 calendar days before late fee can kick in. So I would really encourage people to make sure, you know, that they understand what their late fee policy is and that it's reflective of the new protections. And then there are also some changes around court reform. And I just want to say this, not legal advice. If somebody is facing eviction or does have an eviction case, the first thing and the most important thing they should do is to seek legal counsel so that an attorney can really look at their case and give a tenant their, you know, representation around the best options and be able to actually help them fight their case. We know that when people have legal representation, their probability of staying housed is a lot longer. But that would be what I would recommend. So the court reform does a couple of things, but the biggest thing is that it gives people more time around being able to cure or to pay.
Why is this issue important?
I think that a lot of these new protections are important tools to kind of equal the playing level field between tenants and landlords. Most of the time, most landlords do have legal representation, and oftentimes attorney's fees and certain fees were or are waived to favor the landlord, but never really to like level the playing field for tenants. And honestly, this is also about time, right? And making sure that if someone is able to pay, that they're able to stay housed before, after these 10 calendars run out, that that could mean eviction, that, you know, they didn't have to accept any payment after that. And so it really is important that people are going to have more time, and that it just equals a level field for between tenants and landlords.
That's Cecia Waldarrama Trejo, Associate State Director with 9to5. For KGNU, I am Rosana Longobeter.
Initiated Ordinance 303 on Denver's November 2nd ballot calls for the city to enforce camping bans on private property. The measure also calls for the city to establish 4 camping locations on public land with running water, toilets, and lighting. Critics warn enforcement of the ordinance could be costly and ineffective in addressing the city's housing crisis. Eric Galatis has more.
A growing number of tents popping up in neighborhoods across Denver have made it harder to ignore a chronic and expanding housing crisis in Colorado and across the U.S. An initiative approved for Denver's November 2nd ballot calls for the city to crack down on campsites and to build sanctioned sites with running water, toilets, and lighting on public property. Kathy Alderman with the Colorado Coalition for the Homeless says the proposal amounts to an empty promise because it fails to allocate land and other resources necessary to create safe outdoor spaces.
We know camping ban enforcement and extreme measures like the one proposed do nothing to resolve homelessness. They do not provide resources to get people into safe spaces and into housing.
Initiative 303, proposed by Garrett Flicker, chairman of the Denver Republican Party, would require written permission from owners to camp on private property, and the city would have 72 hours to respond to complaints. Denver currently is not enforcing a camping ban already on the books. A county court ruled that the law was cruel and unusual punishment in a case that could be taken up by the Colorado Supreme Court. If voters approve Initiative 303, Alderman worries enforcement will fall hardest on the city's most vulnerable residents.
Anytime you have an enforcement mechanism that is targeted at people experiencing homelessness, it is going to disproportionately impact those who are more likely to experience homelessness, which often are people of color.
Alderman points to a number of local, state, and federal proposals meant to reverse decades of disinvestment in affordable housing as a better strategy to end homelessness. She says if the city implements 303, it will actually take resources away from motel vouchers and other tools that are effective in helping people find their way into permanent housing.
So if the city's having to respond to every call about every 10 to every time someone sees one, they're not going to be able to send people out to resolve issues. They're just going to be sending people out to move people around.
This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Colorado News Connection.
The rising cost of rent isn't the only factor fueling the housing crisis. Many people want to build their way out of the problem, but there are other ways to make homes more affordable. One government effort may have benefits beyond just housing if it can get off the ground. KBUT's Christopher Biddle brings us this story as part of a collaborative series on the housing crisis across the Mountain West region.
Sometimes it's called home rehabilitation, or an energy upgrade, or a retrofit. We're going to call it weatherization. Details vary, but the basic idea is to use government money to pay for energy upgrades to homes. It's money well spent, according to the Biden administration. The president's infrastructure plan calls for $213 billion for weatherization efforts. That could be of use in the town of Crested Butte, Colorado, where a pandemic-boosted economic crisis has housing at its center. By the end of the summer, this tourist town had an estimated 15% of jobs go unfilled, and local officials fear the fall and winter could be worse.
It's a very tight rope for this community to function. and we're missing it.
Troy Russ is the Crested Butte Community Development Director. He breaks the cost of living into three categories: transportation, basic essentials, and housing.
And that would include the cost of energy towards housing.
And at 8,000 feet or more, Crested Butte and its surrounding communities can get cold in the winter, very cold.
What we're finding is the housing costs are simply dominating the budget, so there's no savings going on. There's very little insurance, and it's skewing people's ability to live here.
That's a familiar story to Josh Schumacher.
I'm not very good at budgeting.
Josh provides vital work to the community. He used to be a chairlift mechanic at the local ski resort. Now,
I fix rich people's toilets.
Josh moved here in the 90s and says that recently more and more of his peers are being priced out while he's figured out ways to stick around. That includes owning a deed-restricted home, and that made him eligible for the town's Green Deed Weatherization Program. Through Green Deed, Josh scored a new fridge and a fresh layer of insulation. As winter approaches, he's hoping the upgrades will provide some relief to an electric bill that's broken at $900 in the past.
I mean, I'm kind of like a lot of people here. I live virtually paycheck to paycheck still.
We have a serious income gap. We have a serious resiliency gap, and that's what I'm trying to help with.
Giza Michael designed the Green Deed program and a similar countywide effort for income-qualified homes called Gunnison Valley Heat, or GV Heat. Studies show that lower-income households usually put more of their money towards energy costs, which means they often get a better return on their upgrades. Last year, GV Heat saved an average of just over $460 per household. But savings are often seen as just a secondary benefit to weatherization. Crested Butte adopted its program originally as part of its climate action plan. And the Biden administration says targeted weatherization efforts will offset racial and economic divides and boost quality of life for the poorest Americans. With all those benefits, you'd think the idea would have taken off already. But according to the Brookings Institute, only 2% of the nearly 40 million eligible American homes are actually weatherized every year. Biden's plan will most likely provide some boost, and then people like Giza Michael will still have to figure out how to spend the money, but she's probably already got a plan in place.
You can't only just throw funding at something, you also need to build capacity.
Hard as it is to hire in any American industry right now, weatherization programs across the country have struggled for years. In another very cold place, veteran nonprofit Efficiency Vermont turned from contracting to hiring and training its own workforce. For projects in Gunnison and Crested Butte, where new construction dominates the attention of the workforce, Michael has to hire a team from the Alamosa Energy Resource Center, some 4 hours away.
The old insulation, and this is, the old insulation was this high. So that's how much.
Josh Schumacher shows me around his upgrades. It's a Thursday, but he's all Friday vibes as he packs his truck for a camping trip. In the glow of the evening sun, it's obvious that Josh, fixer of rich people's toilets, enjoys a high quality of life.
I've moved up the food chain as far as where I'm at financially. Now I'm finally at, I don't want to say comfortable, but I'm finally paying my bills with something left over so I can actually enjoy life.
For Josh, a government-sponsored weatherization program was just part of that puzzle and something that may soon be available to many more Americans trying to get by. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, I'm Christopher Biddle.
We go now to Chris Moore's weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you. Make them hear you.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. This is the month when the federal government will run out of money if the debt ceiling is not raised. Janet Yellen has repeatedly raised the alarm that there will be dire economic consequences for everyone if Congress does not increase the debt ceiling and the U.S. is forced to default on its debts for the first time in its history. Nobody in Congress seems to have a roadmap for avoiding that happening, and that could play havoc with financial markets. Borrowing costs will skyrocket and will go into a nasty recession, which may be exactly what Republicans want as we approach the midterm elections. Mitch McConnell is playing a new level of hardball this time around. McConnell has a long history of attaching demands for policy changes to any debt ceiling negotiations, This time he has not done so, simply telling Democrats they are on their own. Now, in most countries, government borrowing is effectively approved every time a spending bill is passed. America is one of the few countries where we put debt on our national credit card and then debate whether to pay that debt when it comes due later. In the past couple years, Congress added debt to the national credit card with the Trump tax cut and the Biden COVID rescue spending. Republicans are filibustering the higher debt ceiling for the first time because of Biden's $3.5 trillion human infrastructure bill. McConnell has manipulated the narrative, so the polls are now showing that voters are blaming Democrats for the stalemate, so a bipartisan solution seems unlikely. Which brings up the filibuster yet again. Democrats alone could vote to scrap it all together, or to decide the debt ceiling and the American economy that is being risked are too critical to be filibustered. They could quickly pass the debt ceiling increase and even scrub the law that allows these debt ceiling battles to continue with future debt ceiling showdowns. But West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin will not vote for this solution, saying, quote, "We have other tools that we can use," without saying what those tools are. Since the debt ceiling issue is a budget matter, the Senate can also use budget reconciliation, which Manchin also opposes. Under budget reconciliation, a simple majority of senators can pass three such budget bills each year. Democrats have one more reconciliation card in their last hand, which they would rather use for their $3.5 trillion human infrastructure bill. And if they play that last card on the debt ceiling, the complex procedure would take 2 weeks or so to push through and also distract them from their negotiations on the larger bill and maybe even cause a default anyway. There's always the possibility that investors will get nervous in the coming days, causing steep drops in stocks, but the booming stock market right now doesn't seem to care. In addition to contacting your senators about the debt ceiling, you can share your thoughts with President Biden at whitehouse.gov/contact or use the White House comment line, 202-456-1111. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
It's now time to check in with herbalist Brigitte Mars, who brings us her weekly episode of Naturally.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars, and today I'd like to share something I often run by my friends. It's called the 7 Chakra Checklist. So, you know, if I'm hanging out with one of my bros or one of my lady friends, and they're telling me about someone they like, I might, or one of my grandchildren, I might ask them, does this person that you're interested in meet you on every chakra level? So here's an example, red. Do you feel safe with them? Things like driving while intoxicated, losing the keys, doing dangerous things, leaving candles burning, that's not really safe. If they have skills that can help you feel protected, like being able to provide food and safety and self-defense or wilderness survival, that's a good thing. Orange is about community. Do you like their friends? Are they kind to others? Do they keep a nice home and hearth? It's not that much fun if you have someone who's really neat with someone who's really messy. Are they kind to animals? Do they think about creatures like the bees and diversity in a positive way? Yellow is about the Sahara, the stomach, the solar plexus. What are they putting in their body? Wouldn't it be ideal if we were someone who wanted to eat really healthfully? That would be great, and was open to using, you know, things that were good for your health and exercise, and open to herbal remedies and culinary spices. So, yeah, I think it's a good thing in life to have someone who supports you in being your best self. And then green is about someone who lives green. Are they ecological? Are they kind to others? Do they have their finances in order? Do they support things like maybe aromatherapy and yoga breathing? Do they speak kindly and affirmatively? Maybe not too much profanity or yelling and stuff like that. And then indigo is someone who enhances your intelligence. Like, do they like to read things? I always love to share that I love to watch movies with my partner with subtitles. It's always good to be multilingual, but where are you going to put your consciousness? And then the top of the head, the crown chakra, is about connection to divinity. you know, whatever your thing is. But I think being connected to source and spirit and knowing that we're all going to leave this planet and we should do our best to ascend to a beautiful infinity for the highest good. So, you know, next time you get too intimate with someone, maybe see if they meet your seven chakra checklist. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
Thank you for joining us on today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Jamie Sudler, Rosanna Longobetter, the Rocky Mountain Community Radio Coalition, Chris Moore, and Brigitte Mars for their work on today's program, and to Dr. Decibel for his production support.